As we begin, I would like for us just to take a few moments and just recap once again what we have heard over the last 2 days. What is it they say? You've got to hear something 7 times before you actually remember it. So I'd like to briefly just recap a little bit on where we have gone over the last 2 days. And then I want to give you a moment of silence just to simply reflect. Oftentimes we rush through these things, we leave, we get in the car, we start talking about, okay, we need to get groceries tonight, what are we going to do tomorrow, what are we going to do this week, what's your work schedule, what's your calendar like, kids, what do you have, we have practice this night, we have school this day, we have this and that, and we never really give ourselves a chance to actually reflect on what it was that we heard that was meaningful and to each of us. And so I would like to give us just a moment to do that here in a second before we wrap up with just 2 or 3 kind of closing thoughts. So with that being said, just a quick little recap. We've said that God is a missionary or sent and sending God. This is, in fact, one of the most pivotal things that we could think about. And if we can make this paradigm shift in the way we see God, it will impact every area of our lives and of our family's lives. The second thing we said is that we are a missionary or sent people. It is, again, who we are. It is in us and it is in our identity. You can't escape that. You can't get away from that. You can't run from that. That God in his divine nature has sent you. In fact, the reason I know that he has sent you is because you are there. The beautiful thing is that God was working far before you ever showed up to wherever it is you are. He was at work in those people's lives. He was at work at your schoolmates and the people in your classes. He was at work in your coworkers. He was at work in your neighborhood. He was doing all of those things, and he said, I'm going to send you. And God has placed you there in that place. Not to bring God to that place. In fact, God was already there. So take the pressure off of yourself. You don't have to take God anywhere. He is already there. And he is inviting you, beckoning you to say, come with me, participate with me. I'm inviting you to join me in that. And that we have been, in fact, sent to a people and or a place. This is specific. It's not, hey, just go out there and live as a Jesus follower. Just live as a Christian in general. Our Christianity demands, following Jesus demands, that it is in relationship with people. It's not just a vague thing we do and we hold some ideas and we hold some beliefs. And that's it. If it's all it is ideas and beliefs, and it never actually comes out of us and impacts a given people or place, it was really merely just ideas and beliefs. It demands that we engage with people. It's the life of Jesus. It's the life in which we are trying to follow. I love what 1 John chapter 2, verse 6 says. It says, if we claim to be in him, we will in fact do as he did. And so we have to figure out how our identity can express itself in a group of people. We said that Jesus invites us to participate with him in the places we have been sent. And in fact, that participation leads to and catalyzes our transformation. This was kind of that simple phrase, we don't think our way into a new way of acting. Rather, we act our way into a new way of living and thinking. It's participation that transforms us, that allows us to grow. And then we just simply said, here are 5 possible ways that you can participate with Jesus that will transform the place in which you've been sent and will transform you, because if we practice those things, we will become the value in which they express. If we practice blessing, we will become generous. If we practice eating, we should become hospitable. If we practice listening, we will become spirit-led. If we practice learning, we will become like Jesus. And if we reflect and practice the sentness piece, we will embrace our missionary posture, our missionary identity, all the more in our lives. Even if all we did was ever bless and eat, I do think we would change the world. The world is desperate. It's desperate for us. They are. People you go to school with, the kids that sit in your classes, that you play sports with, that you hang out with. I tell you, I remember what it was like being a teenager, and it is the most loneliest time I've ever experienced in my entire life. You got so many things going on inside of you, so many thoughts, so many stresses, so many worries. You're trying to figure out even who you are in the midst of it. It's incredibly lonely. Incredibly lonely. And so everything that you're feeling is what everybody else is feeling. You're not alone. I promise you that. Nobody just talks about it. Because we can. That'd be cool. Keep it up. Same thing that happens in our teenage days. The exact same thing that happens in our adult days. We don't talk about it. We've got to look like, and we've got the perfect marriage, and the perfect kids, and the perfect education, and the perfect job, and we've got it all together, and we can't just be who we are and step into that vulnerability and authenticity. Because, oh no, what if they see that I don't have it all together? Good news, they don't have it all together either. It's part of life. And as we choose to step out in blessing, and as we choose to step out in hospitality, even just those two things, it invites people into our life. It invites people to come, hey, sit with me, come have a meal with me, come hang out with me. Let me say a kind word about you, because then we all need a kind word every once in a while. So in the midst of these things, they will not only change the world around us, but they will, in fact, change who we are as we do them. So as you think about those things, actually, I'll leave them up for you. As you think about those things, now we did other things. We, you actually got together and talked about your sentness, and you maybe kind of took a few steps in discovering what that place was. That might have been a significant moment for you. Maybe putting some names down of people that you could actually begin thinking about and praying for. How can we join you, Jesus, in their life and the work and what you're doing in them? That might have been a significant thing for you. Maybe it was something you read in the scriptures yesterday evening. But can we just take like 3 or 4 minutes? And if you don't have something to write with, you can pull out your phone, go to your notes section, type away. If you have something that you write, if you're the writing sorts these days, I think I've forgotten how to write actually. You can write in your journal or your notebook or your little guide or program. Is there one thing? Just one thing. Let's not think 7 things. Is there one thing that has stuck out to you that you would like to take a next step in? Just one thing. Just one thing. You want to start seeing yourself differently? You want to figure out who you've been sent to, maybe? You want to figure out how you can participate? Or could you do one of the bless, or the eat, or the listen, or the learn, or the send us? Or maybe it's something completely different that maybe God in His wonderful ways has just spoken to you quietly and silently over the last 2 days. So take some time. Think. And prayerfully reflect. And just ask yourself, is there one thing? And I'll give you like 3 or 4 minutes to do that. Because this is also what I'm going to ask you to do at some point today before we leave. If you're a single adult here, I'd like for you to find another single adult. You probably know who they are because you've kind of gathered up at different times. I'd like for you to tell one of those people, what that one thing is. Mom, Dad, you've got kiddos here today. I want you to find one time, maybe in the car ride home or something, and I want you to tell them what your one thing is. And kiddos, I don't want you to blow off mom and dad. I want you to actually listen to them. Because then, kiddos, this is what I want you to do. Teenagers, I want you to tell your mom and dad one thing. Okay? Empty nesters, of course, I want you to tell one another, but I want you to go find a young mom and dad here. I want you to tell them your one thing. Maybe there's, we can begin to emerge a little bit of a accountability around it as well. Continue to think. Time in your breakout after this to reflect on some of that. Continue to process. What are some of those things? Maybe it was just simply being here. It was just exactly what you needed, and you actually didn't need anything that was said, and that could be a high likelihood. and you just needed just to get away and just to be here with the family. That might have just been it. That's okay too. Sometimes those are most rich, most meaningful, most necessary things in our lives. And really quickly, this last session is called Flourishing in Community. And that word flourishing is just simply a word that means to thrive or to sustain or to flourish. Now, I'm going to come back to the community piece. But in all the things that we've talked about, I want to share just two or three ways in which we can, in fact, flourish. Who wants to flourish? Anybody want to flourish? Anybody want to thrive? Sure. Okay. Not succeed. That's not what I'm saying. It's not the word we're using. We're just talking flourish. I'm just going to tell you three really, really quick ways. And then if we want to unpack this in your small groups and breakouts, you can. But first, I want to tell you a story. This past week, my youngest daughter, Hazel, had a new friend join her at school this week. She had an old friend that had to move to a different school, isn't that right? Yeah. And she had a new friend come to school this week. Do you remember your new friend's name?
What's her name?
Savannah. So we were all excited and waiting for Savannah to come to meet her. And Savannah's first day was Monday, and she only had a half a day, is what Hazel told me. She got a little bit tired and worn out, so she went home. Tuesday morning, though, was my chance to meet Savannah, because Tuesdays are...
Tuesdays. What is it called?
Terrific Tuesdays? It's Terrific Tuesday. It's once a month, and... hello, Tornado. or Gale, if you've seen Frozen 2. So once a month, we have Terrific Tuesdays at her class. And I love going to Terrific Tuesdays. This last Terrific Tuesday, you know what we made together? Remember what we made?
What did we make?
We made a tie-dye shirt. It was so much fun. So, and we colored it, all that kind of stuff. But I got to meet Savannah. And I walked in to the room, and I noticed Hazel saying, "Hi!" And I was like, "Hazel, is that Savannah?" She's like, yes. And she continued to say hi to her and sat by her, and we did some activities, and it was really nice to meet Savannah. We got home that evening, and we talked about Savannah, and I just told Hazel how proud I was of her, and how kind she was to the new student in her class. And that was a real tangible way for her to join Jesus in his mission. And we wake up the next morning and we're getting ready to school. And of course, I'm reminding her, would it be nice to Savannah today? It's one thing I did realize that Savannah has a learning difference and struggles a little bit in some areas. And so in my mind, I'm like, hey, would it be super nice to her today, aren't we? And, you know, that kind of thing. And Hazel looks up to me as we're walking to school that morning, and she says, "Well, of course, Dad, she's my friend. It's what she do." It was a beautiful reminder that far too often in this missional life, and in life in general, we forget to see people that are not like us as friends. But we tend to see them more often than not as projects. Things we need to do, things we need to accomplish, or one other person that we need to add to our to-do list. And I deeply believe that if we are going to sustain in this mission, we are going to have to change the way we see people in our lives. We are going to have to switch from seeing them as projects to seeing them as people. You see, recently, I was with a group of pastors, the people that should know better, right? Right, and I promise this was not Finland or Pittsburgh or anywhere in and around. This was a different gathering, okay? I was with a group of pastors, and I asked them the question, what is one thing that we can say that is true about every person that ever lived? So all of these highly educated people thought for a minute, and they talked about it for a second, and then I went around to each table that they were sitting at, and I asked them, what was one thing that we could say that was true about everybody? From table to table to table to table to table, the unanimous thing that was said is that, oh, we are all sinners in need of a Savior. Now, don't get me wrong, that is a true statement. But there is also one other thing that is true about every person that ever lived, and that we can say about every single person. And in fact, I would call this a primary truth rather than a secondary truth. I would say the fact that we're all sinners in need of a Savior is secondary. It's true nonetheless, but it's secondary. What is primary that we can say about every single person that ever lived? Is that, what's that? That they are made in the image of God, which means every person that we come in contact with has significant value and significant worth. Each of you that are sitting here today, before you were some sinner in need of a Savior, that's true, you were made in the image of God. Kiddos, you have significant value and worth. Teenagers, you have significant value and worth. Adults, you have significant value and worth. And so does everybody in the places that we have been sent, regardless of their history, their preferences, their orientation, their background. They are people made in the image of God. And the only way we are going to sustain is if we can begin to look to Jesus and look to people and find in them the image of God and the value in which that they can bring to our lives. This isn't about projects and putting, you know, check marks of people on a list. This is about creating friendships and sharing life. When we moved to New York City, we didn't come to save anybody or to minister to anybody. We were very, very lonely. We just needed some friends. So our building became our friends. Now, they are not people I would have picked as friends. They are not people I would have chosen as friends. There's not a one of them that's a Christ follower. But these people are my deepest and dearest friends, and I cherish them. I love them. Not a project. And so blessing them, it's no sweat off my back. Eating with them, it's what we do. It's who we are. If we are going to flourish, we have got to first be able to see people not as projects, but as people made in the image of God. People to share life with. People that have value to bring to our life, just as much as we hope to bring value to their life. Think really quickly, the second thing is that we are going to have to simplify. One of the other strategic things we've done in both places that we've lived is we have had to say, not only is it necessary to identify where we have been sent to, but it is absolutely essential and necessary to reorient our life around them. The only way you can say no to a lot of other things and a lot of other relationships and reorient your life is if first and foremost you've seen those people as people made in the image of God and that they have value to bring to you. So that means you may hang out with less people. That may mean you try to accomplish less. That may mean you try to achieve less. That may mean you try to be in less places and you have a smaller group of friends that you can actually share life with. In some form or fashion, we're going to have to simplify. We're going to have to go further than just seeing people made in the image of God and understanding that we've been sent. But we're going to have to reorient our life around the people and the places we've been sent to. So this isn't going to probably translate to the same degree, but in New York City, we've said we really don't go outside of about a 10-block radius. If we're going to go exercise, we go exercise in that 10-block radius. If we're going to go to the grocery store, we go to the grocery store in that 10-block radius. If we're going to go out to eat, we go to eat at a restaurant in that 10-block radius. If we're going to engage our kids in a kids' activity, it's going to be at the 92Y, which is within a 10-block radius. If we're going to, our kids go to school within a 10-block radius. And so now, we're seeing the same people on a regular basis. We're not expanding our people network, so to speak. In our old neighborhood, we did things like, this is our neighborhood. We're going to reorient around this neighborhood. Our daughter was a competitive gymnast when we were in Texas. And instead of going to like the best of the best Texas competitive gymnast where all the Olympians went to, that was 45 minutes away, we said, what is the gym place that we can go that's closest to our neighborhood? Because now we just gained ourselves back 2 hours in the day, and it just so happens that there's people in our neighborhood that are going to the same gym that she's going to. We try to make conscious decisions to simplify our life and create margin and space. I think it's necessary. I love what Henry Nouwen says. He says, in the spiritual life, the word discipline means the effort to create space in which God can act and you can hear from God. Discipline means to prevent everything in your life from being filled up. Discipline means that somewhere you're not occupied, certainly not preoccupied. In a spiritual life, discipline means to create space, and in that space which something can happen that you hadn't planned or counted on. Many of us don't have space for something to happen. That would like stress us out. Whoa, this was not supposed to happen in this space. Like we are like stressing now. And our lives are ruined. Not ruined, but you know. And this is this other thing. I would just simply say, stay. And stay what? I would say stay in community. This is not something that you do alone. We have a group, you could call it a church, that has started in our apartment about 2 months ago. Crazy enough, strangely enough, blows me away. I don't even know what to call it. I just pray every day that God, please don't let us screw this up, whatever this is. Because it's high likelihood, all right, that I would screw something up. But it's this beautiful group of people. And one of the things that we've decided to do is we've decided to say, hey, could we make these Bell's habits a bit of our rhythm? Could we identify the places that we've been sent? And could we come together? And could we reflect on how we've joined Jesus this last week? Could we look to Jesus and figure out how we're going to join Jesus this next week? And so we utilize not this great, cool, amazing Bible study, like Bible curriculum. We just simply utilize Bell's. And we just say, who'd you bless us last week? How'd it go? What'd you learn? What about who'd you eat with last week? How'd it go? What'd you learn? What'd you hear from Jesus? Would you learn from Jesus? And we just read one chapter a week. We're not reading like the whole Bible or like, you know, or anything like that. We're just reading one chapter a week. And what do we learn from Jesus? And where did we miss him this last week? And maybe what do we hope for the week to come? And that's all we do. Share a meal together. But it's a group of people that are committed to being a missionary people. We're not all in the same, we don't all have the same sentness, if you will. We've got different places and spaces that we inhabit. But we know that we're at least going to come together once a week, and we're going to encourage each other to to go in, to do it, to be in with each other. And apart from community, we can't do this. Because in fact, being missional is communal. It means that there's going to be two or three of us, or four or five of us together. It doesn't mean that we're going to try to go alone into an environment and be like, here I am, folks. Everything you need to know is right here in me. Not at all. We're going to do it in community. Just a few weeks ago, we were having somebody from our apartment over, but we also invited somebody that was in this community, another Christ follower, to come join us with us. So we hung out together. A few weeks before that, somebody in the community was having a work party, and they invited two or three of us to come and be a part of it as well. Now, that's not every week, that's not all the time, but when they're gathering, we will go with them on occasion so that we can encourage one another and be with one another and help one another in this. I'm just going to close by just simply saying this. As we move forward, I just don't want us to forget the way that Jesus sees us. A lot of life happens. We have ups and we have downs. We struggle in significant ways. We worry, we have anxiety, we struggle with depression, we struggle with control. We struggle sometimes with medical conditions, and we struggle with just life in general. Some of us get lonely. Some of us wonder if there's anybody else out there. And I'll never forget the story, and it's actually my favorite story in the Bible. It's the story where Jesus calls Matthew the tax collector. Everybody remember Matthew the tax collector? You heard that story before? And he comes up to a tax collector booth, and Jesus sees him there, and he says two simple words. Does anybody remember what he says to Matthew, and then he gets up and leaves everything?
Follow me.
He says, follow me. Now, there's a lot packed into that phrase, follow me. It wasn't just, hey, you know, I know we've seen each other around, and I know you don't really know a lot about me, but will you come follow me? Like, just leave everything. Family, friends, job, school, come on. It wasn't that type of thing. This was a phrase that was used in that day and time that when it was used, it meant something of great significance. It was something that an apprentice would say to an apprentice. They would say to them, I see tremendous amounts of work in your life. I see value in your life. I see goodness in your life. I think one day you could do what I do. And I think you could do it far greater than I would ever be able to do it. And in fact, me spending time with you, yes, is I'm going to impart some things on you, but you're going to impart some things on me too. I would like to invite you to follow me. And that is what that phrase meant. It wasn't, I need you to make a conversion or decision or this or that. It was just a willingness to journey with the apprentice, or in this case, to journey with Jesus. Whenever I get down, or whenever I struggle, or whenever I have a hard time, I try to remember this story. And I try to remember that regardless of what's going on in my life, that Jesus looks at me and says to me, the same way he says to each of you, I see value in your life. I see worth in your life. I see potential in your life. I want to be with you because you mean something to me. You, in fact, will make my life far more joyful. And I think you could actually do what I did better. Could you imagine Jesus actually saying, you make my life far more joyful? But parents, isn't that what we think about our kids? You make my life far more joyful. For some reason, we don't think that we make Jesus joyful, but we do. So in the midst of this journey, as you move forward, my prayer for each of you is that you would not underestimate your potential and value and worth and what is inside of you, regardless of age, regardless of understanding, regardless of knowledge. And you would realize that the call to follow me that Jesus asks of each of us is, yes, a call to participate in his mission, but it's also a reminder that we are made in his image. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this time over the last few days. What a joy and an honor it has been to be with the folks here. I'm going to just pray for just this moment that, God, that we would be able to just to hear something from you. A little nudge, that little voice, maybe that is from Jesus, whatever that might be. God, the things in which you've said to us, may we not forget, may we not quickly fill up our life with so much stuff to do because we think that value is found in that, and forget the things that you've said to us. I pray that we would be reminded of your invitation daily to participate with you. Yes, to participate in your mission and to be able to change the world around us, but also your hope and prayer for us that our lives will be changed. We would be reminded of the significant value that each of us have in you. And regardless of what we're going through, regardless of the struggles, regardless of the heartache, regardless of the frustration, that God, you are present. In fact, whenever there is struggle and heartache, you actually move closer to us in some strange way. In the Bible, you are always drawn to that. And so, God, wherever that is in our life, that we sense your presence in our lives. We sense that you love us. May we feel and be reminded that we too are made in your image. God, may we rest in that. May we rest in the fact that we bring you joy. God, we love you. May we pray these things in your name.